Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the film podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one absolutely nailed it. On this week's show, in the green room, we've got a pair of criminals on a mission from God in the Blues Brothers. While in the green room next door, we've got Ireland's greatest soul collective in the shape of the Commitments.
You'd better get bright, pal. We got a show to do. Then we got to figure out some way to collect that gate money. Get it to the Cook County Assessor's Office as soon as they open in the morning.
Joliet, Jake, and Elwood Blues. Two men with a mission, and only 11 days.
Hey, what's this?
What's what?
Have you got soul? If so, the world's hardest working band is looking for you. Contact Jay Rabbit.
I'm putting a band together.
Do you need a singer? Wise men say...
Well, what kind of music are we going to be playing, Jimmy? Soul.
Soul?
That's what you've got to measure up to, lads.
Well, like, maybe we're a little white.
But who is getting an encore, and which act will we booed off? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crumpton.
And no Alex, because he's ill.
I can't go out. I'm sick.
Boo, you whore.
You got anything to say about that?
Sorry, yeah, get well soon.
Get well soon, exactly.
Get well soon, Alex.
It's a shame because we literally just received a message from a listener who said they joined Twitter today to tell Alex that his memory of the animal on fire is from the film Knowing.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Don't join Twitter just for that. Leave Twitter now. It's a trash fire. Get out while you can.
That's why I'm not on it.
Yeah. But thank you for that. We'll pass it on to Alex on his sick bed. It's not ideal him being away because these are his choices.
Yeah.
And they are very much his choices. I'll probably go into it either today or Thursday as to how this has come about.
Right.
It's quite strange pairing.
Did he choose it?
Kind of.
I always think it's you.
I know you do. I can talk you through the process of how this happened. I wanted to do Sing Street and the Commitments.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
And my colleagues were not that into the pair.
Yeah.
And so I can't make you do anything, even though you say it's a dictatorship. So I went quiet. And then Alex suggested Blues Brothers Commitments. I'm like, does that work?
There is a lot in common, though.
Well, he said yes. And I was like, well, if it gets Commitments over the line, I'll take it.
Okay.
And so that's how we ended up here. But it was just so long as I could do the Commitments.
And then suddenly
there was a mess with the spreadsheet and then Alex ain't doing Blues Brothers.
And then you've
read Commitments. I'd forgotten it was a book. And so suddenly it was like, well, I can't take it now.
I know.
So somehow I've ended up going from Sing Street versus the Commitments to me doing the Blues Brothers.
Which is not ideal.
Well, I mean, I've got a lot to say about the Blues Brothers,
though.
Well,
I'm glad someone does.
It's just, there's a lot to say.
Yeah.
Starting with what is it?
Yeah.
We can talk about that for an hour.
I know. I've got an idea. my summation is it's a private cosplay party at which some filming happened.
Sure.
That's what I think.
Yes. Yeah. And some partying.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Is it? But is it a film?
Is it a film? It is. We will endeavour to answer that question over the course of the next hour. So, clues.
Yes.
Alex, I think his clue was a band apart.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, this has been very last minute for me doing this prep, so I'm hopefully going to get this right. I posted a clue saying that we were ending with a live performance.
Right.
And from what I could see, we had one correct answer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
That's amazing. How does that feel?
Yeah, really good. the winner is Paul Logue. Congrats, Paul. I think he's won before.
I say so.
But he's winning again. And your prize is a night of karaoke with the three of us.
Yay!
What are you singing, Vicky?
Oh, my God. I've just been refreshing my list. So, Call Your Girlfriend, Robin, which I know isn't contemporary-ish because it's like years ago, but that's sort of shot to the top now.
I'm
I love
pretty
singing.
Sure that's brand new. That song, as far as I know.
To us, yeah, it's brand new. Yeah, God, I'll have to post my list on Twitter. I won't. Cause it's
no, don't. You're fine. You said one, Robin.
It's
brilliant.
Very lengthy. What's yours? What's your go-to? I can't
I
remember.
Know. I'll give him Meatloaf or something. I don't know.
What did you do last time we were there?
I think I did Bat Out of Hell.
Did you?
I think you guys wandered off after. We had a room to ourselves last time. I think you guys wandered off to the bar halfway through.
It's a long song.
It's very long. That's why I love it. I just love the attention. Right. Connection section. You said there's a lot.
I've got tons.
Okay.
Are you ready? James Brown. James Brown. Singing in Suits. God. The Muppets. White people being inspired by or appropriating the music of African Americans, depending on your perspective.
No, sure.
And Wilson Pickett.
What, where are the Muppets?
The Muppets. Miss Piggy gets a mention the Blues Brothers. And in The Commitments, one of them makes a joke about playing the drums like Animal.
Oh, very good. Miss Piggy's in the Blues Brothers.
Is she?
Yeah, the man who holds up the condom is Frank Oz.
Yeah.
And there's another Muppet in the shop. The guy's asking how much the Muppet costs when a car comes in.
Yeah.
A lot of Muppet action, actually. I'll be honest, when I was watching Blues Brothers, I thought this would go really well with the Muppet movie.
Fine, yeah.
Same movie. What have I got? I think the lounge bar, Murph and the Magic Tones, is basically the same bar... band that plays in the wedding in The Commitments at the beginning.
That's a good point, yeah.
They're both... there's also a weird thing that the soundtrack early on, you hear songs by the band that's going to be formed later,
yes.
Which is quite a strange thing to do. But good songs. Those weren't very good connections of mine. Very good of yours. Well done. You've
Thank
won
you.
That. You've
Thanks.
Won. Let's get on with this. On Thursday, Vicky's heading to Dublin with The Commitments, meaning I'm off to Chicago. So let me take you on a journey. The Blues Brothers focuses on two music-loving crooks who get a shot at redemption by reforming their band to play a gig that will raise funds for an orphanage, which is a good idea for a movie. However, the film also features about an hour of cars crashing, Carrie Fisher with a rocket launcher, loads of Nazis, some guy who likes Cheese Whiz, a used condom, Pee Wee Herman, a violent penguin, a car that does backflips, and Twiggy sitting in a car for a bit. And Steven Spielberg, all of which might not be a good idea for a movie. That suggests to me, once again, that cocaine is one hell of a drug. That's the Blues Brothers. When did you first see this movie?
Oh, so this is the thing. I've never seen it.
What?
I know. And I've obviously, I know it's much loved. And so, but imagine seeing it for the first time at 41 years.
Madness.
It's
madness.
So, you know, I know of it. I recognise the motif, you know, the Blues Brothers in their suits and the music and all the rest of it. But you mentioned the other week, you were like, oh yeah, rocket launchers, Nazis. I was like, oh, fuck. So I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to... It just passed me by when it came out back in the day.
Sure.
I don't know.
Well, you were born.
I was just being born. And I just didn't ever catch up with it. I was never told it was bad. I was never told to avoid it. It just passed me by. And now watching it, the sort of unstructured approach is not entirely for me, but I can see that there is a lot to love. I can see why people adore it.
What's strange about you not seeing it is you like Ghostbusters.
Yep.
And they're both these brainchilds of Dan Aykroyd, where he likes characters in uniforms driving special cars. And he writes these, as we'll get into, these things that aren't scripts.
Yeah.
He just writes 400 pages and shoves it in a director's face and says, make a movie.
And someone else goes, I'll edit it and we'll do it.
And it's the things, I guess his three passions in life are cars, music, and he's obsessed with ghosts. You know, he believes in ghosts. And so he's, to be fair, in the space of a couple of years, he made it all happen for himself.
I mean, I never really understood what the Blues Brothers was.
Did you see it when you were young, though?
I did. It got re-released a couple of times when I was young. And so I think there was one version, there was a director's cut. I remember it being a big deal, this re-release. And right. It was the first time some version of the soundtrack, or it was widescreen or whatever. And that's when I watched it, where it seemed to be everywhere in about 1989. They re-released the single, Everybody Needs Somebody, and that entered the top 10. And so they sort of were reborn, I think. So I had the soundtrack cassette and I had the live album because I loved the music, and I had the VHS, and I even had the video game.
We're super fan, basically.
Which I was really looking forward to talking to Alex about, the Amiga video game, where you wander around to this 8-bit, 16-bit blues music.
And what is the mission?
You just kick people and stuff. I mean, that's what it was a side-scrolling platformer. I feel like Alex would have a good story now. So Shall we pause?
And then we'll insert it in later.
Yeah,
get him on the phone.
I mean, it was never one of my favourites because it's just such a strange confection. But at the same time, it's got real watchability about it. It's a bit long.
I mean, it's so long. It's very long. I mean, it's interesting looking at it from a today's perspective because we talk a lot about, the proliferation of content on streamers and the way that people's attention spans are fractured and people are doing different things when they're watching TV. And so that affects dialogue because you need these constant reminders of what's happened in the plot. And then you watch Blues Brothers, which is like 40 years old. And that's not threaded together like a film. You're better off doing something else while you're watching it, like drinking, for instance.
Sure.
Like, it's very much, I can see that it would be a communal experience, but to sit down and watch as a film is pretty hard going when you're used to story.
Yeah, and I'm not massively into car crashes.
Right, yeah.
Or cars. And so when I'm watching it, it's for the live numbers, which aren't all live, which I'll get into. But yeah, so if it's on the telly, I'll watch two or three of my favourite musical
scenes,
numbers.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right, let's do a bit of background. So it all starts with Dan Aykroyd owning a speakeasy in Toronto called the 505 Club. He partied there. He played blues records there. He brought John Belushi there. He got him into the blues because John Belushi did not like blues and soul. He was a heavy metal guy.
Makes sense.
So yeah, it does, doesn't it? So he got Danny into heavy metal and Danny got him into the blues. And they came up with these characters just to jam with each other and their friends, but also to serve as a warm-up act at Saturday Night Live. And so it evolved. They started playing clubs as these characters, and people loved them, so they worked on the music. Carrie Fisher was a guest host on Saturday Night Live, and she was dating Dan Aykroyd at the time, and she said, "I want my musical guest to be the Blues Brothers." And they went down a storm there. It sort of exploded, and then Steve Martin asked them to open for him at some live gigs he had, huge gigs he had. I think they were maybe at the Hollywood Bowl, and they turned that live act that they did that night into an album that became one of the best-selling blues albums of all time.
Right.
And so this turned them suddenly into this viable entertainment act. And so they worked with Saturday Night Live band leader Paul Schaefer. They got their Soul Session friends together, and it sort of legitimized them. So this is how the music is described by Dan Aykroyd and the people who are in the band. Fatback Memphis rhythm with slick New York horns. It's not Delta blues. It's Chicago electrified urban blues fused with Memphis stacks.
little inside baseball, but fine.
Sure, but I'm getting out there.
Yeah.
John Landis reckons they're the best blues review band after the blues James Brown and Tina Turner's bands. And the album was so successful, they felt like they owed something to the artists they were copying.
Yeah.
So, which I think is fair. So we'll talk about whether they were stealing or celebrating or actually helping. But it was a sort of perfect storm because the album was number one.
Yeah.
In the blues charts. Saturday Night Live was pretty much the coolest number one show, and Animal House was the number one independent movie, comedy, of all time. And so suddenly Universal Pictures realised we could have a hit on our hands. We own all these things here, so let's put them all together. And it came together very quickly. They got a development deal and a release date within a year, but there was no script. So Dan Aykroyd came up with a backstory for these characters with John Belushi and John's wife, Judy Belushi. And then he went away and wrote it up. And he said, "I didn't write a script, I wrote a volume." 324 pages, Vicky.
Egregious. I mean, I don't care because I love him. It's just different times, isn't it, where you can just turn in. Like, is it true you like presented it in the Yellow Pages because it was that ginormous?
Yeah, he packaged it in a phone book.
So he knows producers. It's not on.
And how this... I wasn't able to find this script. I don't think it is out there. But the idea was each member was recruited individually and it was like each member of the band had their own movie. Which I get, and, you know, I guess John Landis just collapsed it all into, like, we'll go to two places and pick up the band and we're off.
Yeah.
Landis said it was pretty incoherent, but by this point, Landis knew what he was doing. And so, yeah, turned it into a workable script. So lots of these musical acts in the film were not working much at the time, and they were keen to do it to help relaunch them. So, yeah, cultural reappropriation or... you know, is it about celebrating it and giving these guys a second lease of life?
Yeah.
I mean, apparently, according to Landis, Ray Charles was the only one who was selling records out of everyone that's in this film. And that's because he was doing country and western at the time.
Right.
So soul, blues, whatever music genre they were doing was not really selling much. And to be fair, like the backing band of the Blues Brothers were part of Booker T and the MGs. So they came up with some of the riffs in this film themselves. Mm-hmm. It's whether it's appropriation or are they using their celebrity to shine a spotlight.
If everybody's getting paid,
yes,
then it's less appropriate-y, isn't it?
Yep.
Because the appropriation it would be more stark if you like cut them out and you're like, we're the two people at the front, we get all the attention, we get all the money. If everyone, I don't know if it was an equal share or whatever, but that's one step forward.
Well, I don't think it was equal share on the film. They were all paid to be in the film, but the soundtrack was a big deal.
Yeah.
And they're all on the soundtrack. And I think, I don't know, Aretha Franklin's my favourite singer. I was wondering, was this my way into Aretha Franklin? It might have been. I'm sure for other people it was. Maybe Ray Charles and I don't know. But it's... What's interesting, though, is that soundtrack. There was a race issue with this film once it was finished. So exhibitors, cinema exhibitors, reckoned no white audiences would come, so wouldn't program it. And then other exhibitors didn't want black audiences in their cinemas, so didn't program it.
Oof, okay.
And then the other issue with it was John Lee Hooker, who sings Boom 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 early in the film. He's the only one that isn't on the soundtrack. Because the producer of the soundtrack said he was too old and too black.
Yikes!
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, as John Landis said, these three things completely shocked us and came out of nowhere once we'd finished the film. We thought we had this great multicultural film.
Yeah.
And yet there's these issues.
They hadn't calculated for racists.
Yes.
Shit.
But it didn't matter because the film was a big hit.
Yes.
You know, I thought it was more of a cult hit, but it did make a lot of money. And it certainly... the film that's not gone away. I mean, that cult aspect of it, I think it was in Space or something. They said that in the 90s and the 80s, like every student had one of the Blues. It was the Big Blue, Betty Blue, or the Blues Brothers. You had one of those posters on your wall.
You knew who you were getting into bed depending on that poster.
Yeah,
Betty Blue, fucking hell, that's a memory.
My brother had Blues Brothers, though. I wasn't into it enough, but
I ended up with the Three Colours trilogy. That blue, that's the one I
Did you?
Was my boyfriend.
I've never seen him.
Yeah, fine.
That'll be a fun week.
Yeah.
We rarely do three films in a week.
Let's triple threat that.
That's pretty much the background. A lot more to say, but we'll talk about that when we get into it. So should we do the movie?
Yeah.
So we start with quite a lengthy shots of an industrial cityscape.
Yeah.
There's fire. It's pretty much the start of Blade Runner. Yeah. Don't know where
it's
that comes from.
It's good to see where some of the money was spent. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
I think, to be fair, a lot of the money's on the screen. What money didn't go on drugs is on the screen.
The beginning is ambitious and the scope and it's cinematic.
Yeah.
And the end is fantastic.
There's a lot of cars that get trashed in this film.
A record amount of cars.
A lot of streets that got shut down.
Yeah.
But we're in Chicago. Jake Blues, played by John Belushi, is being released to his brother Elwood, played by Dan Aykroyd. This seems to take forever.
But is it on... is it comical? Because it gets... obviously, I know what a big star he was.
Yeah.
And so you do withhold the reveal of your big star's face for as long as you can. But it gets to be... it's like 25 minutes. Not 25 minutes.
It lasts too long.
So, but is that a joke? As in, is it meant to make me laugh? Because it's like you've played with the form of that trope.
I don't know. I feel like it's a building of their mythos.
Okay.
It's sort of... you're building up who they both are and then you're getting little bits of the outfit.
And you get his hands.
Yeah.
You get everything apart. Apart from the face.
You get the reveal.
It's
Frank Oz giving him the soul condom.
Yeah.
But you get the suit, the hat. I feel like it's myth-making. And Elwood's waiting in his police car. And it's a very cool reveal of the pair. It could have happened 5 minutes. quicker. And then they drive off in the Bluesmobile while She Caught the Katie plays. Mm. God, that's a good song.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I was listening to the original Away Here by Taj Mahal. This is better than his version.
Yeah.
Elwood jumps a bridge in the Bluesmobile. Mm-hmm. So it's telling us that he's this genius driver. And they visit the Penguin. The Archbishop's going to sell off the orphanage they grew up in, and they need $5,000. There's a lot of swearing here, isn't there?
There is a lot of swearing.
For what, such a kind of a family film?
Yeah.
It's kind of. Yeah, you've got swearing and violence.
Yeah.
None on man violence. She kicks the crap out of them, basically. These thieves with filthy mouths and bad attitudes.
It's quite funny.
She's very good.
She's brilliant.
She's played by a woman called Kathleen Freeman, who says that not a day goes by where someone doesn't shout Penguin at her. But I guess this is their redemption. Is this a redemption story? I couldn't really understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Having just said about fractured attention spans, I needed a bit of hand-holding, because you've said they've got this whole backstory, but I've just met them. But in sort of 15 minutes, all that's happened is one of them has been released from prison. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
So they grew up in an orphanage, a nunnery or whatever, and it's like, oh, that's a lot of information. I kind of needed a bit of grounding. I maybe needed someone to say, very quickly, we grew up here and we love these people and we'd do anything for them.
100% agree. Yep. Left to our imagination. That was probably in the 324 pages that Dan Aykroyd sent over.
You've got to cut something.
I know that Belushi's wife did write a book around the time that gave you the background of everyone. I think he used a lot from that script to sort of like almost like a Blues Brothers scrapbook.
But right.
Put it in the movie. cut out one of the musical numbers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say they're not all good. But we get one now, a gospel number, not blues. It's called the Blues Brothers. What is blues? I don't think gospel is. Maybe it is. James Brown's singing live here.
Yeah.
He's one of the only people singing live in the movie. Did you spot Chaka Khan in the background?
It's only after I was told to look
right
for it. Yeah, I did.
Oh, she looks great. So this is a scene where, and we'll get into this now, John Belushi was coked out of his mind on the set of this.
So he's doing the flips for real.
Maybe. This is a day where John Landish threw away Belushi's cocaine and they had a massive row. I mean,
what are you going to do with someone that's that drug addicted? If you say, if you go, oh, have you thrown my coke away? Well, I'm clean then. You're just going to go and buy more coke?
But what happened is they had a row in the streets outside the set or the church. And in the middle of this row, he said, Belushi just put his thumb up to hitchhike. A car pulled up with some student in.
Right.
Said, you're John Belushi.
Yeah.
And went off to the Chateau Marmont together to party.
Okay.
So you couldn't win.
No.
Yeah, it's another day on the set. They couldn't find John and he was tired. They were on location in a street. He just got up the road, knocked on a door, said he was hungry and tired, went in the house, made himself a sandwich and then went to sleep on the guy's couch.
Right.
You know, they called him America's house guest at the time, John Belushi. And it's kind of funny, but equally, we know that he dies soon after this.
It's sad,
And Landis says it was scary and it was dangerous and it was heartbreaking. And in his belief, Belushi isn't at his best in this film. He said the Belushi in Animal House was a much more energetic performer than some of the scenes here where I see that it's not the real John.
Yeah, he looks like someone who is kind of over the crest in terms of losing that battle. Mm. So on the downward slide, I think. And that is really sad.
Yeah.
It's only funny, all of it, if you come out the other side of it and you use it as an anecdote. I mean, it's a bit dark, but it isn't funny.
No. I mean, it's part of the reason, not the only reason, part of the reason they wear sunglasses for the whole movie.
Oh, really?
Because their eyes have disappeared, basically.
Oh, no.
So Jake sees the light. The band literally sees the light and they decide to put the band back together, literally.
Great.
Police chase.
Yeah.
They trash a mall. It goes on for ages.
Yeah.
This is the Dixie Mall in Illinois that had been closed for a year. Everyone in there is a stunt person, which I'm pleased about, because how did people not die in this scene? When you're watching them drive and people jump out of the way, I can't believe my eyes.
Yeah.
Did you spot John Landis? He's in one of the cars.
No.
He's one of the troopers.
Right.
Yep. A car that ends up upside down. But yeah, it's like, you think you know what the film is, and then suddenly, well, this is Smokey and the Bandit suddenly. Mm. I guess thinking about it now, they're cashing in on that success as well. But I'm into the music, I'm not into the cars.
Yeah, it's got a good story engine. I love Get the Band Back Together to save the orphanage. That's all good. But it's like, oh, I'm in a car chase for no reason.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah, because it's all to do with parking tickets and traffic tickets.
Mm.
Carrie Fisher shows up, the rocket launcher. Someone on Behind the Scenes documentary said they reckon that this film is where it all started for her as well, her problems.
Yeah.
Being around these people. I don't know if that's true or not, or whether she was partying hard before this, but we'll get back to Carrie Fisher because she's going to show up again. Elwood lives in a tiny room on a train track.
That's very funny.
It is.
Yeah.
John Candy shows up.
Yeah.
No scenes with the Blues Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
He's across from them, but it's a shame, actually, looking back, that there's not scenes where they're sharing the screen together. Murph and the Magic Tones. So these are, who I talked about earlier, members of the Saturday Night Live band, the Booker T and the MGs. These are some of the best musicians of the era playing in this band. They say that Jake owes them money. Elwood says Jake owes everyone money. And we learn that Jake was locked up for sticking up a gas station to pay them the money he owes. Although, actually, no, he was locked up to cover room service charges that he'd done. but that's good, because I think it's useful to know why he was in prison.
And like, it's for a good reason.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, no. Kind of. To pay his bar tab.
Yeah, there's nothing that would make you feel squeamish.
No. And this is the first time we hear that we're on a mission from God, which is obviously the famous catchphrase from this film. They go to a restaurant, Chez Paul.
I love this.
With a maitre d'. Do you?
Yeah, I like the fact that Mr. Fabulous is the maitre d', because the setup is he's playing music for money. So when he's there and he's like, he's the maitre d', I just thought that's a fun reverse.
Sure. Pee Wee Herman serves them.
Yeah.
Paul Rubens. It just, again, this feels like it's an outlier. This feels like literally a Saturday Night Live sketch of two people in a restaurant.
Most of it does.
Being rude. I think it's quite funny how much for the women, sell me your children.
Yeah, I do.
There's some Nazis.
Yeah.
Thoughts about the Nazis?
I don't have... I like seeing Henry Gibson always.
Yeah.
That's it. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a bit ahead of its time, because we're seeing this on the news, quite a lot of people like this now.
Sure.
They're the American Socialist White People's Party, which is called Trump's Republican Party now, I believe.
A little rebrand.
Bit of politics. they drive the Nazis off a bridge. Then we get our second number, Boom Boom, by John Lee Hooker. This is blues.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't got many blues songs in this film, I don't think. This is a blues song. But as I said, he was the only artist who was not allowed to be on the soundtrack, which is absolutely
shocking.
Heartbreaking. I'm going to take a break now, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Aretha.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we're back. The boys head to a cafe. Elwood orders dry toast. Jake wants four fried chickens and a Coke. I do think that's funny, the order. And they're ordering that food from Aretha Franklin. who sings the song Think. Soul, not blues. What do you think of this scene?
It's fine. Like, I love her.
Yeah.
And I love the song.
Yes.
But it's all, you know, in a way, it allows my attention to legitimately wander because it's a musical number, so it's okay. I don't have to concentrate super hard. I was quite grateful for that.
She is miming here.
Okay.
John Landis said that's because...
she's a rubbish singer.
Well, he said that she's never sung a song the same way twice and doesn't know how to.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Also, it's just an issue with technology as well. It's obviously Aretha Franklin can sing live and you'd rather she sings live, but it's quite hard to record live on a set, and we'll talk about that on Thursday with the Commitments, where they had a system in place that allowed them to do that. So there are only two performances in this whole film that are live. They head to a... they pick up their saxophonist cook. He keeps his sax in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. That seems dangerous to me. and then they head to a music store where Ray Charles is blind, because Ray Charles is blind, but he's shooting at children. And then it's just, I love how contrived this film is. I mean, it had a script, obviously, but the characters literally say to him, tell me a little about this electric piano. And Ray Charles sits at the electric piano and starts playing. He sings Shake a Tail Feather, not blues. So we've got choreographer Carlton Johnson oversaw the dancing in this. So there's amateur dancers in the street doing this sequence. John Landis said, that was a mistake. This was a nightmare to shoot. Any other scene in the film, they're not amateurs. So they shot the gospel scene after, all professional dancers. Because
He
said, this just looks like a mess. But I think it looks like fun.
I think it looks real.
It's natural, isn't it?
As real as it can.
But, do you like, how we feel about the Ray Charles scene?
Look, once again, it's a very fine scene, but I'm really keen to get on with the story. Like, where is the, we don't have the band, we don't have the gig, but it's okay because my attention is wandering, I'm getting a bit bored, and then Carrie Fisher turns up with a flamethrower.
Sure.
So it's fine.
So I think top five singers for me of all time, Aretha's number one, Ray Charles in the top five. So I definitely like this 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm into it. But they need a gig. Someone says, who you gonna call?
Who you gonna call?
Yeah, I know. Imagine my delight. It's a bit early, but it's fine.
they get their uniforms. As you said, carry flame flow as a phone box. They survive it.
Meandering.
And it's like, it's a cartoon, isn't it? It's Looney Tunes because they're being killed and yet they're surviving. And it's sort of larger than life. I don't know what I'm watching. They head to Bob's Country Bunker where they pretend to be a band called the Good Old Boys. At this bar, they play country and western. they try to sing Gimme Some Lovin', not blues. They get bottles thrown at them through chicken wire. And so they play the theme from Rawhide, not blues. The place goes nuts. This is one of the most memorable scenes, I think, in the film. Just the idea of the chicken wire and the guys in the country and western bar where they're going to die if they don't get it right.
Yeah, the chicken wire is a lot of fun.
Stand By Your Man, not blues.
Yeah.
A bit out of their vocal range, but that goes down well with the locals. And then they do a reprise of Rawhide, which reminds me of a gig I went to in the 90s, Vicky.
Right.
Do you remember the band ABC?
No.
That's the look.
Yes.
The look. So the lead singer was Martin Fry. And he'd always wear a gold lamé suit in the 80s in the videos and the live performances. Uh-huh. So in about 99, 98, Martin Fry was playing at Brannigan's in Croydon.
Right.
So I went down, and it was £5 a ticket. I went down with Danny Grimes on a Thursday night.
Grimesy?
Grimesy. We thought this would be a laugh. So he comes out in his gold lamé suit still.
Yeah.
30 years later. He's got a backing track. Just him on his own. He sings The Look of Love. Everyone goes nuts. Then he does a song called Poison Arrow. People clap, not as much. And then he goes, anyone want to hear Look of Love again? And everyone goes, yeah! He sang it. He did it three times. I've never seen anything like it. But you know what? It was brilliant. It'd be like, and I have seen Chesney Hawkes. If Chesney Hawks did 10 different songs, you'd be like,
can you do
one and only three times? So yeah, that was my sort of Rawhide experience. They drive off. We see an advert in the background. See you next Wednesday. Do you know about See You Next Wednesday?
No, I don't.
So that is, there are posters for fake movies called See You Next Wednesday in every single John Landis movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a line from 2001, A Space Odyssey. It's the name of the porn film in American Werewolf in London.
Right.
So I don't know if it kept on that episode. But yeah, Coming to America, it's in everything. So okay. you can always spot that. They're going to hire the Palace Hotel Ballroom, but they're running out of gas. They go to a gas station where Twiggy rocks up needing gas.
So weird.
Elwood propositions her. Yeah, I just wrote down, what the fuck? All I can think is,
wasn't Twiggy big in the 60s?
She was. So this is quite a long time after.
Yeah.
I mean, she's never really gone away, but she certainly wasn't selling magazines as much as well.
No, or Marks and Spencer's jeans.
Exactly.
That's just so
true.
She
made her return. All I can think is, a producer really wanting to sleep with Twiggy.
Sure.
Or was sleeping with Twiggy.
Yeah. It's of its time.
Yes.
The proposition, let's say that.
Sure. I mean, to be, he just says, I'm going to be at this hotel.
Yeah.
That's allowed.
I like the button on it. I thought it was funny that she actually goes.
She does go.
That's really funny.
Now, I can't remember, even though I only watched this 2 weeks ago. Does the gas station explode here?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
Because
it's very telling that you can ask that question in a film like this and we don't know.
Because lots of stuff got cut from this film, believe it or not.
Yeah.
This was a much longer film that John Landis thought was better. And he said a deleted scene that got cut here was them spilling petrol, dropping a cigarette and the place exploding behind them, which was the point of that scene.
I don't remember
Because they don't notice that they've blown up. No. Okay, well, if it's in there, I don't know why I've just described it for you. If it isn't, you'll know why that scene was there. They just cut it at the wrong time.
Right.
So we got the gig and everyone, all the characters we've met, the Nazis, the police, the bands, they're all congregating here at this time. But rather than get into the gig, we stop so that Cab Calloway can sing Minnie the Moocher.
Which is fine. I mean, no, sorry, it's more than fine. It's one of the best bits of the whole film.
It's not blues. Yeah, it is. But it completely slows the film down when we need the momentum of the finale.
And not to do this, but I'll do it anyway. You can't have your two heroes, dual protagonists, whatever we call them,
yep,
not get to the gig because they ran out of petrol. I know that their enthusiasm for a car chase is what's led to them running out of petrol, but it has to be, it's a flaw in their character. That's like screenwriting day one kind of thing. You can't just have something like that that prevents them from getting there, even if you want to give time for Minnie the Moocher, which I do understand.
To be fair, this was Dan Aykroyd's day one of script writing.
That's so true.
This was his
first
day.
And it is unusual that on your first day, someone goes, we'll make that.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah. This makes no sense, but we will shoot it. So a funny aspect of this is Cab Calloway fell out with John Landis. They had a big row.
Right.
Because he just recorded a disco version of Minnie the Moocher.
Really?
And he said, we're doing that. Because whatever, it's 1980 and 1979. And Landis this is all about celebrating the classics.
Yeah.
And Calloway did not want to do the original. Apparently, every sort of 5 years, he'd re-record it as to whatever the music craze was at the time. There's like a rumba version and a twist version.
Brilliant.
And so, yeah, we nearly got a disco Minnie the Moocher here. But Landis eventually convinced him. And it reinvigorated his career.
Yeah.
I like the fact John Candy, who's after them, wants to hear them sing at this point.
Yeah.
Although it does remind me of those military police who wanted Tom Hardy to fight in Warrior. And we were like, no, you don't just let the show go on if you're there to arrest the person.
That's so true. They're like, all right, at the end, not a problem.
Although at least this is a comedy. We'll let them off. It's less incongruous than Bloomin' Warrior. And then we get the Blues Brothers. So this is the Blues Brothers act that they come out on stage after a big build-up and
do a bit of a dance.
Well, no, first you've got the briefcase handcuffed to his wrist.
Yeah.
And the other one's got the key and take it out and brings out the harmonica.
Wow.
And then they do a little dance. What do you think of their dancing?
I think they've got a very long way on being able to do a few little shuffles. No,
yep.
It's fun to watch.
It's very satisfying to watch.
Yeah.
I think
more for Dan Aykroyd, because I'm bringing all of that on at all of the Ghostbusters. Every time the man opens his mouth and says anything, I'm in raptures. Like, even there's a line earlier, which is not funny, and someone's like, who are you with the police? No, ma'am, we're musicians. Because it's that in his voice,
yeah,
and it's the Ghostbusters feelings for me, I'm like, that's fucking hilarious. And it just can't be that funny. I like watching them have a bit of a shuffle around, but I don't think it's anything that special. Probably was at the time, it felt incredible.
Well, I don't think it's that special. I just think it walks that fine line between being nearly good,
yes,
but also funny. Like, they're funny, But it's kind of cool.
It's dream dancing for me because you're walking that line of like, yeah, I know I'm no good. I'm secretly a big
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly what they do.
Yeah, because when if I go onto a dance floor, I think I'm brilliant. I'm obviously not. That's embarrassing for everyone. But if you've managed to perfect the technique where you're like, it looks like I'm not trying, but I've got
yeah,
something.
But that's what they do in the whole film, isn't it? By not reacting to anything and yeah, just being completely deadpan the whole time.
Yeah.
Actually, it's quite impressive how quick they're
when
moving.
When they move, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the top half is completely cool and they're singing the song.
Yeah, is that the secret? You sit in the pub, you don't move, you don't speak, tune comes on. Do a little bit of shuffling around.
If you did that, I would be well into
Can
it.
Can you imagine what but, a different night you'd
But
have.
I'm also watching it thinking this would be one of the great gigs you'd ever see.
Yeah.
If the, you know, Belushi is a good singer. Aykroyd obviously isn't, but he can play the harmonica. But the band's amazing and Belushi is good enough. And then you, the combination of the songs and then the dancing. I think yeah, you've got a hell of a gig.
But also that the crowd are so warm to them as well.
Like yes,
they, everybody loves these guys. And in real life, they love them, didn't they?
Yes.
So
yeah,
it's, you know, those vibes.
I'm impressed that the crowd can get that into it when they're surrounded by people with shotguns. They sing Sweet Home Chicago. This is blues.
Yay!
And then they go backstage and they receive a $10,000 advance on their record contract.
Yeah, so this is confusing.
Yeah, talk to me about it because I have answers for you.
So they're given 10 grand, but they need five. And then he says, here's 1,400, give it to the band. So, and also they're getting the cover charge for the gig. So there's a lot of different amounts
and
of money.
And they've got to pay for the instruments as well.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of different amounts flying around. For my simple brain, you need someone to go, there's $5,000.
Yeah.
And then...
Did you think this guy was a good actor who pays him the money?
No, is he a real person?
He's a real person. So, when they were putting the Blues Brothers together and they were doing these Steve Martin gigs, they were rehearsing one day. And an A&R man was there, went up to them and gave them a record contract on the spot.
Right.
This is the guy
okay,
that in real life gave them the record contract. They phoned him up and said, can you do that again in our film?
This is why it's a private party. This yeah, film is an in-joke.
You could have cast an actor.
You should.
Or you could have cast Bill Murray or whatever.
Or the like, world's most recognisable A&R man yeah, or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Not some bloke.
I'm Berry Gordy from Motown. Here's 10,000. Yeah, like...
Yeah, brilliant. But no.
No.
It's just a huge in-joke.
But it's fine because they're going to end up in a sewer where Carrie Fish has got a machine gun and keeps missing them. She stayed celibate for him. He stood her up at their wedding.
Yeah.
He apologises, begs for her forgiveness, kisses her, drops her.
Pushes her.
Yeah, pushes her down. I mean, she might deserve it. I can see why he might have run out on her.
Right.
Because this is a very extreme reaction, isn't it? To being stood up.
I think it's the celibacy that's got to them.
Yeah, maybe so. And as I say, it's ironic. She was engaged to Dan Aykroyd at this point in time.
Yeah.
Elwood says, it's 106 miles Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark and we're wearing sunglasses.
Lovely stuff.
John Landis claims a lot. Have you got the sense of him over the films we've done with him? He's not short of an ego.
He's not, but he looks like such a cuddly, nice man.
Yeah, I've met him.
Is he not?
I was very excited to meet this cuddly, nice man.
Mm.
And I was very disappointed.
You're always disappointed. Have you ever...
I love everyone, but he was very prickly. He's a very prickly guy. He doesn't listen to you. He talks over you. And he does things like claiming that he came up with the sunglasses line. That was all him.
We talk a lot about like when a line is good, it's the cadence of it and what am I trying to say? The rhythm of
yeah,
that line. And it is professionally written.
Yeah, yeah. But what were you going to ask me?
I was going to ask you if anyone you've into, I think sometimes you're disappointed because you're not that your expectations of them as a human are high, but you just have a lot of love for them.
Yes.
So then you go in to see them and they're a normal person, or they're grumpy, or they're tired, or they're pissed
yeah,
off,
sure,
or whatever,
sure,
and they're a pain in the arse. But have you ever been to interview someone where your expectations were quite low and they completely superseded all your expectations?
Yes.
Are you allowed to say who it was?
No, I've got to try and think. I've got to try and remember. It's happened a few times. Let me think and come
yeah,
back to it.
Someone that you were going in there being like, oh, can't be arse, and you walked away being like, that person is incred.
I tell you what, do you want to know the time I got the really starstruck and I wasn't expecting it? Because I was just so not bothered.
Oh my God, I could guess. Wait, are they British?
Yeah, I don't think you'll guess
Vernon
it.
Vernon Kay.
Oh my God, you nearly got it.
You
nearly
joking?
Got it because it's someone who randomly made a film. It's two people who made a film. And I...
Danny Dyer.
I was not that bothered about meeting them. But then when I got in the room, because they'd been around on my telly since I was a kid, because we're about the same age.
Oh my God, Chuckle Brothers.
No,
oh.
I drank with them.
Oh yeah, you
did. They were a laugh. In the morning, we drank whiskey before lunch. Ant and Dec.
Really?
Yeah, they made a film called Alien Autopsy. I went there to interview them thinking, whatever. And I walked in the room and suddenly my brain's going, fucking hell, Chris, it's Ant and Dec. And I couldn't quite believe I was sitting with them.
There's a girl, I'm smiling because there's a girl at work. She loves them so much. Like, her life's ambition. She met one of them once, I can't remember which one. And it was the best day ever. Like, her love for them is so sweet. Yeah. It makes me think that they are super sweet.
Yeah. Oh, they are. No, they were great. They were really nice. Yeah, we talked about football. It was fine. Brian May was better than I was expecting.
Yeah, I would expect him to be thorny.
Yeah, not at all. Really warm. That was for Flash Gordon. I spoke to him, and yeah, he was really lovely. And at the end, he offered me free tickets for his box at We Will Rock You.
All right.
Didn't bother.
All right. No, do you know what? It's been lovely talking to you, but no.
I'm going to say no.
I'm busy. When is it?
So we have a big highway chase. There's a pile-up of state trooper cars. I don't know. Did it feel to you like the film should have ended with the concert rather than chase?
It's as usual with something that you're building up to the gig. Yeah.
Yeah, the chase should have been before the concert, maybe.
Yeah, to get to the concert. Yeah, fair enough. Because then it's against all odds and the moment of victory when they burst on stage and all the rest
of
it.
That could have been their delay. This chase
it's
rather
the same
than
in the
petrol.
Commitments, though. Like you should have ended there, kind of thing. I was a bit like, oh no, because why would we not ended there? But the car chase is so fun and entertaining that again cancels it all out.
I wrote down they shouldn't have sped up the footage. It looks unrealistic. Apparently not. I then watched the documentary. It looked like speeded up footage. They were going so fast. So they reshot it with people on the street either side, stunt people, so that you could see that this was like happening in real time, the way they were walking. Again, I can't believe people didn't die. But this is where some of the costs of this film were skyrocketing. They had to have PAs at every street crossing. Because it's a big, long road stopping people from crossing the road every time they shot it. So, yeah, it was carnage. Mm. Carnage.
Oh, nice. Thanks. Sorry. Miles away.
The Nazis show up to Ride of the Valkyries.
Yeah.
They head towards a road under construction. I'm thinking they're going to do Thelma and Louise here before Thelma and Louise.
Oh, God, imagine.
Would have been a good ending.
Yeah.
And they probably could have survived because it's a mission from God. But they don't. They flip backwards and fly over the Nazis. So this is the word I was trying to, the phrase I was trying to think of earlier, magical realism. There's quite a lot of that in this film.
That's fair.
And this is actually explained in the original script, and they even shot this. So there was a scene that they cut that explains how the Bluesmobile has special powers. And at night, they leave it in a garage where it's above an electrical transformer that hums and makes it magical. They shot this scene. I've watched the scene. It's like, well, I'm watching it not thinking the car's getting magical powers. No. I don't know why my brain would think that.
No.
And yeah, just as, you know, the film was too long, so they cut that out. But yeah, the idea is this is a magic car.
Great.
Yeah.
I love magic cars.
It's essentially Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. The Nazis don't do a backflip and get dropped from a great height. This is another crazy thing. So they literally dropped a car from a helicopter. Mm-hmm. And John Landis was saying that they had to get some kind of special permit to prove, they had to test this out.
I fucking hope so.
To prove that the car wouldn't turn into some kind of craft that moves, that it couldn't get caught by the wind and drift and therefore land on someone. They had to prove that the car would just go straight down, that it wasn't effectively an aircraft if it was dropped from that height.
Well, thank God for civic checks and balances, Chris, to be honest. Thank God.
So they go to the Cook County Assessor's Office. I like it. Films where they make out something as something that everyone knows, and
yeah,
like,
we don't know what that is, do we?
It sounds good though. They arrive just as the police, the fire brigade, and the army with a tank show up.
Yeah,
a lot of money being spent here in central downtown Chicago. Yeah. Even more money being sent on the Cook County Assessor, who is played by
Steven Spielberg.
Are you happy with that?
I guess.
Yeah.
Who cares?
You know what? 10-year-old me, I think I was probably 10 when I first watched this. It was quite exciting to see Steve, because I knew what he looked like, and it's quite exciting to see him.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess, a bit pointless. It's like people having their own private party.
Yep.
They pay the debt. They get arrested. They end up in prison where they sing Jailhouse Rock,
lovely,
which isn't blues. And then everyone's singing Jailhouse Rock over the end credits, even the crew.
Yep. Love it.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So this isn't where the story of the Blues Brothers ended. I found out in 1997 there was a cartoon made where the Blues Brothers were voiced by Jim Belushi and Peter Aykroyd, their brothers.
Right.
Tim Curry also appeared.
Is it for kids?
Yes.
Okay.
Never aired.
Oh, shame.
It got made, never aired.
Sure.
Because maybe they put a stop to it because in 1998 we got the sequel.
Did we?
Did you not know about this?
No.
Well, I remember when this came out. I was old enough by this point. In 1998, we got Blues Brothers 2000. It was a monumental flop.
Okay.
John Landis says, don't watch the film, buy the soundtrack, and he directed it.
Did he?
But they replaced... It's Dan Aykroyd again.
Right.
They replaced John Belushi with John Goodman.
Right, yeah.
Who can sing and dance,
makes sense.
But it doesn't feel right. And then they had an African-American and a kid. So the Blues Brothers, there's four of them.
Okay.
And Landis just said, the studio said, oh, we need a black person. We need a child. So we hit all four quadrants. And it's like, he said they decimated the script. We had no budget. And it was just, he said that he reckons the musical numbers are better, but the film is a disaster. So
okay,
we watched the right one, basically. So that's it, Vicky. Have you got any more to say about the Blues Brothers?
I absolutely don't.
I just feel bad Alex wasn't here because I think he would have had a lot to say.
It's very much his sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's
what, stupid.
Stupid, yeah. But also he just likes... whereas it makes me frustrated,
yes,
he can appreciate the craft that makes something look disjointed is right. The nicest way I can put
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And he likes... We're going to put words
likes,
in his mouth now.
Yeah,
he likes
cartoons.
He likes action and noise. And he would...
Yeah.
Much more into these car chases. Than me. I was expecting him to sort of us to argue, but no,
sadly not.
What's your favourite scene, Vicky?
The car chase at the end, adding all the hardware. I even like it when there's bolts and horses, although they're not hardware, and especially dropping the Nazi car. I like it. I just couldn't believe they dropped a car that high for real, but they did.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't care. I wish I cared about those things. What's wrong with me?
You don't like driving.
No. And, you know, I guess I talked about it on Fast and Furious as well. Just not into it all.
No.
I like Think by Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
Because she's my favourite singer. And I wish she was singing live. But, like, I think it's fun watching her dance with the women behind her, one of whom's her sister, and then the guys get involved. And it's such basic steps, but it's just fun. Who's your most valuable whatever?
Cab Calloway, James Brown, Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles and John Lee Hooker. Those people, those famous people singing the music that I like.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. I've written down Aretha Franklin because she's my favourite singer.
Yay!
And what would you change?
So it does seem churlish of me, so I'm not going to do it to say this is... Is this even a film? Is it even a series of sketches? It's a coke-fueled party.
Yep.
But anyway... So it could do with some plot and some character action and consequence. But anyway, I'm not going to do all of that because it's stupid. So I would like them to do Minnie the Moocher again because I really like that bit.
Really?
I also think Alan Rubin as Mr. Fabulous is so good that even though it's quite a long film, I'd like him to get a bit more, even more to do.
Yeah. Is he the band leader guy?
He's the horn man. So
he's in the
restaurant and things like that. So I just think he's very good. And he swears quite well. Like when he says the soup is fucking $10, I enjoy that enormously.
So with Minnie the Moocher,
yeah.
You'd want that over the end credits. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think just in a film that's so unstructured, someone just goes again. And they go, yeah, no problem. Yep. And just do it again.
So you want it to be longer. Interesting.
Yeah.
My change is take Aretha Franklin with you. Have you just seen what she's done? Did you just hear that you're all men, you need a woman. She's yeah. Let her sing.
Those are your four quadrants. P.S.
I was quite surprised that the jailhouse rock is a song about having a riot in a prison.
Yeah,
I'm really surprised that Jailhouse Rock doesn't precipitate a riot in the prison and they escape.
And they escape.
I just
yeah.
feel like that's the end of
that's
your film.
So true,
they're back
yeah.
out on the streets.
Yeah.
You know, everyone driven wild by the rock and roll and bang.
Do you know what I thought they were going to do a joke of? When they're in the steam room and I can't remember the man's name, he's like, I can get you the 5,000 seat place. I thought the joke was going to be, it's a prison because you've got guaranteed bums on seats. And then they were going to do the gig in prison and then they could break out of prison,
yeah.
like you just said.
Yeah. Better. And that's it. That is the Blues Brothers.
Lovely.
I had a conversation about
yeah.
music. We'll save it for next week.
Okay. I'm so excited
Alex
to talk about it.
Yeah, I've got a really long list of people's suggestions. They're really good. People have good taste that listen to this podcast, unsurprisingly. So let's look ahead to next week. Clue.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got clues. They're my choices. Have you got a clue?
No.
Okay. All right, which clue do I go for?
You go. If I can think of something, I'll let you know.
All right. Okay, my clue is,
you're not the Messiah. You're a very naughty boy.
That's great.
Because effectively, we're talking about people with a God complex.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so the clue is, you're not the Messiah. You're a very naughty boy. Right, that's your lot. If you like what you heard, tell a friend. And check us out on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube and the like as What's Better Than Seeing Us?
It's
hearing us, obviously. I did it the wrong way around.
Yeah.
What's better than hearing us?
Seeing us.
Yeah.
Or is it?
Bollocks. Probably not. All right, that's it. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Thursday with The Commitments.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.